Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 276, recorded December 8th, 2015. I almost forgot what year it is.
You know, we're almost on our 7 years of podcasting.
That's a long time. Almost done with 2015.
I know. That means we will be, in January, we will have done, at some point in January, we will have done 7 years of podcasting.
That is quite a few years.
This particular podcast. I mean, we don't do any other podcasts on a regular basis. So, yeah, Aquarimax.
It will have been going for 7 years.
Yeah.
You know what else I think today is?
What?
I could be messing this up, but I think it's the first day of Hanukkah.
Well, if it is.
Happy Hanukkah.
Yeah, to those of you who celebrate it. That's cool.
That's fun stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So where are we now?
We have Tom in Provo, Utah, and Chris in Tomball, Texas, Josh in South Central Kentucky, Jeremiah in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Matt in Perth, Western Australia.
Yeah, that's quite a full lineup. That's good.
Yes.
Plus, I apologize for not getting the video of the Malawi cichlids up yet.
I don't know if they're going to forgive you.
I don't know either.
You might have to grovel a little bit.
But part of the problem is I was supposed to get 3 files and only one of them came through.
Oh.
But I'll try to do what I can with that one. It's just going to be a little late. But we also went to the aquarium again. The Loveland Living Planet Aquarium.
A new exhibit.
That was fun.
Yep, it was a deep sea exhibit and they had the big, huge...
deep sea isopods.
They're big.
Bathynomus giganteus.
I don't know, like 2 feet long and how wide? 6 inches wide?
Oh, yeah, something like that. I don't know if they were quite 2 feet long.
These are not your mama's roly-polies.
They were very big. It was cool. And they had some king crabs.
Yeah, they had Japanese spider crabs.
And then they had some other kinds, too. What else did they have in there? They had hagfish. I had never seen a hagfish
before.
They
did.
They had all kinds of fun stuff. It was neat. They had a bathysphere that you could get inside.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun.
That was fun.
Yeah.
It didn't go in the water, though.
No. Plus, we went and visited some of our old favorite things. The baby rays that we talked about last time are bigger now.
They're bigger.
Some of them are like large pancake size now.
Mm-hmm.
Way bigger than cookies.
Much bigger than cookies.
Yeah. So
the penguins were very active. They were getting fed, so they were actually swimming all over the place. And
we got
doing
some footage of that, too.
Funny things.
So we'll probably compile a little video and put that up because it was fun. But let's get to our guests, our contributors, our Aquariumaxers.
Okay, we'll go to Tom first in Provo, here in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
Says, Russ and Kelly, here's a quick quiz item for Aquariumaxers. What fish has a genus name that is an anagram of the genus name of a similar fish?
You can go ahead and read the really good hint.
Okay, he says, a really good hint. The ratio of the number of abdominal and caudal vertebrae is reversed in the two. That's not a very good hint for me.
Okay. Well,
I don't think I've ever counted vertebrae in any creature.
Really?
Yes.
Have you ever dissected an owl pellet?
No.
Oh. Okay.
I think we dissected worms in high school once. I think I opted out of the frogs because it was so stinky and poor frogs.
I know. But owl pellets are already dead, so.
Yeah, but I don't think we did those. I don't think that was an option.
Oh.
I had a lame high school. We didn't do cool stuff.
I think maybe I did that in third grade, but then I did it by myself a million times because we knew where an owl lived by John's house. And so we would always go find the owl pellets all the time.
Did you count mouse vertebrae?
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
Sorry,
anyways, we'll get to
tangent.
The answer at the end of the...
Oh, no, we better just... I was kind of...
No, they have to have time to go Google it.
But that's
cheat.
Not even fair. I was just giving them
just
some time so that they
the
could think
answer?
About it.
Okay, where's the answer?
Because that was plenty of time to think about it.
Okay. The quiz or the quiz answer.
Okay, wait.
Oh, well, you just told me to do it.
I totally did. I know. I contradicted myself. Okay, you have to pause it right now. Pause the podcast and think about it a little while longer. Okay, now we're good. Okay.
Because
that was their pausing. We don't have to pause.
Oh,
they have to do
okay.
it. Okay.
Okay. The genus name Boraras, as in Boraras Brigitte, is an anagram of the genus name Rasbora, as in Rasbora heteromorpha.
Yep. I felt like kicking myself after I looked up the answer, or saw his answer, because I couldn't think of it. But then when I saw that, I thought, I should have had that one. So I did feel like kicking myself.
Isn't anagram, is that the backwards one, or is it just...
An anagram is when you rearrange the letters.
Okay, that makes more sense, because I'm like, that's not it backwards. What's the backwards one?
Palindrome?
Palindrome, that's what I'm thinking of. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Let's go to his email now.
Okay.
Says, my aquarium was a bit out of sorts for a while, but it is making a comeback. The plants are mostly the usual. Java fern, Brazilian pennywort, Anubias wisteria. Wisteria?
Mm-hmm.
Like that we have on our back deck?
No, different species entirely.
Oh, okay. And water sprite. Oh, I'm gonna yawn. Sorry, guys. Hang on. Oh, okay. The latter two, of course, require trimming at least weekly. The Anubias flourishes but has never blossomed, as I understand it does for some aquarists. Is there anything I can do to encourage it to flower? I also added some shoots of Rotala indica that have provided nice contrast, and one has sent side shoots that I have successfully replanted.
Cool. Well, let's address that question really quickly. Anything you can do to encourage it to flower? Mine flowers. There's a flower right there.
It does. Across the room quite here. Regularly, actually.
It flowers a lot. I don't know what I'm doing. Maybe I ignore it. And it flowers. I don't know. The only thing I do in terms of fertilization in that goldfish tank, besides the obvious goldfish, is occasional potassium chloride. About once a week or so, when I feel like it. So I don't know.
I don't. What does he have in there with the plants? I don't remember.
Well, he's using CO2 and doing various things.
But like fish-wise?
Fish-wise?
Yeah.
I think he's got a few live bearers and some tetras, and he's got a couple of bristlenoses in there.
Hmm.
So I'm not sure what else, and that's been a while, so he may have some different fish in there. But you know what? That's a really good question. I'm wondering why his is flourishing and yet not flowering. Weird. Okay.
They don't have male and female Anubiases, right? They're just all the same.
Right, that's my understanding.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not like our pecan trees.
No.
Okay. A couple of years ago, I added some Bolbitis... Oh.
You can have fun with
Heduloti.
That.
Heduloti. How do you say it?
That's fine.
Or African water fern to my tank, but it quickly dwindled to a mucky hunk of green smaller than my thumbnail. I was going to throw it out, but then it connected to a rock in the path of the outflow from my filter and now spans my aquarium from front to back, about a foot, and the highest portion rises to about the same distance above the substrate. It is a very attractive plant, at least in my opinion, but it apparently needs a couple of things to be successful. Like Anubias and Java fern, it has a rhizome which should be attached to a rock or driftwood rather than being buried. And then in parentheses he says, if Aquarimax has taught me anything besides surface area, and then he says, Kelly, stand up and sing. Oh, there's a surface area song. It's Don't Bury the Rhizome. That should be on a t-shirt, too.
Very true.
The second requirement is that the African water fern likes to be planted where the water is moving. Once I met those two conditions, its growth has been a slow but very steady.
That's cool. That's a good discovery.
I've attached an inexpertly taken photo of the tank as it now stands.
But it looks really nice, and you can see it right there.
I didn't call it inexpert, he did.
I know. But look, see,
that's the
fern. Yeah, it looks really cool. Yeah.
We will put these up, of course.
Yeah, the tank looks really nice, actually, despite the professed inexpert photography. I think it looks really good. So, thank you for the quiz, too. That was fun, even though I felt like kicking myself afterwards. I probably would still have done so if my knee hadn't hurt so much.
Well, if this were at the roots of the mountain, Gollum would have eaten us both.
That's true. We missed the riddle.
We did. Beatus est pisciculus. That's from Tom in Provo.
Yep. Thank you, Tom.
Chris in Tomball, Texas. Says, hi, Russ and Kelly. I have a half moon betta that is a little over a year old. Ever since it reached full size, it began having issues with ragged fins. Lately, the problem has become worse with some pretty serious fin loss, and he now acts lethargic compared to his previous behavior. I rarely see him swimming around the tank. He still eats beta pellets and the occasional bloodworms when he's resting in plants near the surface, but will not swim to the top at feeding time when he is, or if he is elsewhere in the tank.
Hmm.
The tank is a 20-gallon long tank with a Anubias, floating Anacharis, and a single piece of driftwood. The only other tank inhabitants are red cherry shrimp. The tank has an Aqua Clear 20 filter with a sponge over the intake, and the temperature is maintained at 78 degrees Fahrenheit. Water changes of 30 to 40% are performed weekly. I've tried putting him in a separate 10-gallon hospital tank and treating him with aquarium salt for a week or so without much change. I also tried treating with Mellifix while in the main tank without much change either. I'm not sure if this is fin rot. There's no discoloration of the fins that I can tell. I also don't see anything in the tank that could be causing any physical damage. Could it possibly be the shrimp causing stress? Any suggestions you might have would be greatly appreciated. He says, thanks, Chris and Tumble. Oh, there's a P.S. It says, P.S. I've included two older pictures. One is the split 20 long he and another beta originally inhabited. He is the blue one on the right. I thought the stress from the other beta could be part of the problem, so he was moved to the 20 long shown in the other picture a few months ago. The guppies in the picture were moved out before transferring him in. If I can get a decent shot of him in his current state, I will send that as well.
Okay. Well, I looked at the picture. It looks like it's a nice setup. Well, both of them are nice setups, really. And the only thing that I can say, I can say a few things. One is that I do think the setups are nice and perfectly appropriate for betas, with one possible exception, and that is that the 20-gallon split tank may have enabled the betas to see each other too much.
So he just flared too much and blew his
fins? That can stress them out, and it can also cause them to blow their fins, which is possible that that was initially an issue. Maybe. It may not be, but that's one thing. Another thing with half moon bettas, or any betta with, you know, really fancy exaggerated toes, finnage, their fins are quite delicate, much more so than fish with smaller tails. And even the driftwood, I could see the driftwood being a problem, potentially.
Like if he was rubbing on it?
Right. It's possible he could get some damage there. Maybe the shrimp.
If he's
sitting down, you know, on the bottom of the tank a lot, it's possible that the shrimp might come and nibble if they're hungry on the bits of his fins. You know, that's possible. That could happen.
So kind of, you know, he blew out his fins and then just there's some other problems going on that he hasn't healed yet. And so he's just not feeling very good because he's getting nibbled on by shrimp.
I mean, I don't know if, I wouldn't say that the shrimp are the first, you know, cause, but it's possible that if he blew his tail and then he's resting a lot on the bottom and they're nibbling at it.
He just hasn't recovered. Yeah.
The fact that he's resting a lot on the bottom, though, I mean, at that temperature, I mean, that's a great temperature for bettas. The whole setup looks like it's a stimulating environment for him and everything.
So is he resting on the bottom? That. He just said he'll eat when he's resting in the plants near the surface. Does it say if
he's resting on the bottom? Well, he does say he's lethargic and that he rarely sees him swimming around the tank. So I guess what I'm saying is,
if he's just sitting there, the shrimp could come and nibble on him.
Yeah, and it says he will not swim to the top if he's elsewhere in the tank. Mm. So that kind of indicates he spends some time on the bottom.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I'm kind of puzzled. I mean, you're saying that he's a little over a year old, too. That could be an indication. If he's a year and 4 or 5 months old, and he's also...
He's kind of an old beta.
Or if you've had him for that long, and then he was in the store for a while, he's already, you know, not a young beta anymore. Most likely. I know people talk about bettas living to 5 years, and it does happen, but...
It doesn't happen very often.
It's never happened to us. We've had bettas live 3 years, or a little over 3 years, but that's about it.
Gwen's betta was about 3 years, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, Nigel was about the same. You know, we've had a couple that lived that long.
I just forgot her betta's name. What was her betta's name?
Coral.
Oh, right.
So, it could have something to do with that, but really, it sounds like you're taking care of this betta perfectly. I'm just thinking there could be, you know, it could have to do with some age issues. It could have to do with just exaggerated fin development and blowing his tail, which bettas will do even when they're not scraping them against anything. You know, sometimes they'll just flare or different things and it'll blow. So it could be something like that. We had several really, you know, finnage heavy bettas in the past that would blow their tails frequently.
It was sad.
Yeah, like St. Andrew and St. George would do that a lot and so on. So, and it would be months before they healed, and they never quite healed perfectly. They would get, so they were looking fairly nice though, and then they'd blow them again sometimes. It was really kind of aggravating. Kind of
frustrating.
But.
Well, do you have any suggestions for how to help him feel better?
Well, he did say he moved him to a quarantine tank and there wasn't much change. Meaning that maybe the shrimp are not an issue after all. And I don't know, just how old was the betta when you got it? Because if it's getting old, then there's nothing you can do except for make sure the fish is comfortable and can reach its food. That would be something I would say.
You might be able to get the food better in the smaller 10-gallon tank in the hospital tank.
Right.
If he's too tired to swim all the way up to the top.
Yep. You could also try, you know, putting the temperature up to 80 and see if that makes a difference. Sometimes bettas will...
I'm more comfortable at 80 than 78.
And a lot of times bettas will sort of hit a, you know, you put them at 80 and all of a sudden they just kind of hit a quantum leap of...
Just happiness.
Energy.
I totally understand that.
Yeah, I've noticed that sometimes. 78 is a good temperature for bettas. It's generally considered to be a good temperature, but I have seen bettas do better at 80, so it could be a possibility.
Can't hurt, right?
Yeah, I hope that helps.
Yeah.
Because your husbandry certainly seems excellent, and the space is certainly great. The tanks look great, too. Not a whole lot you can do in terms of changing those.
So, yeah.
But, yeah, let us know about the age of the betta, just in case. You know, that could be something. Because sometimes you'll get a betta that's in the store that's already, you know, 8 months old or so. And if that's the case, then it's already a fairly old betta.
It's already lived almost half of its life. It's time for that station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99. Okay, well, should we go to Josh in South Central Kentucky?
Yes, let's.
Okay. Says, hello, Russ and Kelly. Just wanted to give an update on my red cherry shrimp parasite situation. After not having to salt dip any shrimp for 5 consecutive days, I stopped my Paragard dosing regime. It's now been over 3 weeks, and the tank continues to be parasite-free. Paragard seems to have done the trick. I use 75% of the recommended dosage daily for 10 consecutive days, coupled with the occasional salt dip, some small water changes, and vacuuming nastier areas of the substrate. And there's more good news. All of the adult females in the tank are now buried. I'm still waiting for breeding to start in my 10-gallon crystal red shrimp tank, but for the moment, all is well in the shrimp world. I've also sent along a few more pictures from each tank. Thank you and keep up the great work. Sean, South Central Kentucky. That is good news. It's nice to hear when it works out. Those are pretty shrimp.
Did you say Sean or did you say
Josh? I did say Sean because I was looking at Josh and South at the same time, and so it changed it to Sean. Okay. I'm sorry, Josh.
Just confused me a little bit. That's okay. So Josh, yes. And his tank looks great. The shrimp look great.
And we will, of course, put them up. Those are pretty shrimp.
They are. These are the crystal reds.
Oh, okay.
And that's the red cherry there. It's great to know that the Paragard is working. That's something to file away in our archives of shrimp medicine. And hopefully those of you out there who have been experiencing similar issues will be able to take that into account. It sounds like Paragard is a viable option, which is kind of nice because it's a fish-based medication. It's not like you have to go to the... the veterinarian to get Panacure, which is often marketed for an anti-parasitic for dogs, and you have to figure out how that dosage works and stuff. This
way, complicated.
It sounds like it's working, and it's easier to do for that reason. So, great to know, and we're glad that your shrimp are all doing better.
Okay, should we go to Jeremiah in Grand Rapids, Michigan?
Yes, indeed.
He says, "Hello, as my suggestion to Joe for the 55-gallon, I am going to suggest a largish trophy fish with a lot of personality. I'd suggest an Oscar, but I've been seeing some conflicting info on their tank size needs. On that note, my wife apparently loves tiger Oscars. I'm also fond of them. They remind me of a fishy blue-tongued skink in personality."
I love that comparison.
"What resources, sites, or care guides would you suggest to help me narrow down my researching? There's a lot of bad info out there. Thanks, Jeremiah."
Well, I love your idea. One, like, trophy fish, as you call it, or what is the term I often use, specimen fish, where it's really one pet in the tank, is a fun thing. One of the first fish that I ever had an acquaintance with was one of those, and it was, in fact, an Oscar. My neighbor down the street, when I was about 5 or 6... had a big tank. It was at least a 55, it may have been bigger, with one Oscar in it. That was it. And I would go find worms on my way home from school and bring them over and say, "Here's a worm, can you feed your Oscar?" She would do that sometimes.
A cute little you.
She didn't always do it, but sometimes she would. Once I got so excited that I she's cracked open the door, I just ran into her house with the worm, and "Here it is!" And she's like, could you wait a minute? I wasn't quite ready for you. But anyway. So I thought that was a lot of fun to watch her Oscar eat the worms.
That's cute.
And so I like the idea. And there are lots of different possibilities for a trophy fish or specimen fish, not just Oscars. There are a number of cichlids that could work. And maybe some puffers. Puffers are full of personality. And there are quite a few freshwater and/or brackish puffers that could work. Not to say you could do all puffers or all cichlids in a tank that's only 55 gallons, because it's not actually that big. And I would say an Oscar in a 55 is probably pushing it.
How big do they get, really?
Oscars can get really big. Mm. I don't know. I mean, it's easy for them to get a foot long. They can get longer.
Well.
So I would say I love the idea. Maybe a different, somewhat smaller cichlid for a 55, but as you're looking for, you're doing some research on that, Jeremiah, I would suggest Wet Web Media. That's a great
site. Is that a website?
It is, wetwebmedia.com.
Okay.
They've got some great information. I've communicated with them on a couple of occasions. They've always been able to help me out. I don't know specifically, I'm certain they have some stuff on Oscars, but I would just say they tend to be very good in terms of thinking of, you ask about a species and they won't hesitate, they won't pull punches, you know.
Just give it to you straight.
Yeah, some of the websites will try to be encouraging people to get into the fish they're interested in by saying, well, yeah, you can do this and it's easy and stuff. Like a book I read when I was a kid that said you should have at least a 20-gallon tank for your Oscar. Not really. They'll outgrow a 20-gallon tank very, very quickly. And I actually got an Oscar when I was a kid. Or I guess it was my brother's, technically, but, you know, we kind of worked together on the stuff. And we got a little red tiger Oscar baby, and it was really fun, but we couldn't keep it very long because it outgrew the tank really fast. So I believe we brought it back to the pet store and traded it for something, but it really wasn't a very long time. For it was, you know, it was before we knew it, it was twice as big as it was when we had gotten it.
Oh.
But really interesting fish. And they're full of personality. So I like the idea. And maybe some other cichlids for Joe. Maybe the idea of looking at some of the puffers that could fit in a 55. Not all the puffers can. As I said, some of them get way too big. A few things to think about. I've heard 100 and or 125 gallons as a minimum for Oscars.
Wow.
Because they're big.
For one?
They eat a lot of food, yeah. Yeah, it's not uncommon for people to suggest tanks of that size. They eat a lot of food, and they produce a lot of nitrates.
Mm.
And in a tank that big, that means a lot of water changes. A lot of big water changes.
Yeah.
And what some people do with fish like that, for the puffers or the cichlids, big things that eat a lot, you can't put plants in with Oscars. You have to be really careful about what you do put in with Oscars. Decor-wise, because they can pick things up and drop them or throw them hard and break things, including your tank.
That would be bad.
Yeah. So a lot of times people will have to put special heater guards on their heaters so they don't crack the heaters, or use titanium heaters, and put the titanium heaters in tubes so they don't bang the heater against the glass and break the glass with the heater.
Wow. Do they just need some toys?
They do appreciate toys, and they don't...
What kind of toys do you give a fish?
Well, you can give them a ball that they'll floats at the top, and they'll push the ball around. You can, of course, train Oscars.
That would be
fun.
To
do things. I've seen that happen. You can give them interesting food. They love crayfish. It's one of their favorite foods.
Mm-hmm.
Some people who keep Oscars will raise, like, the cloning crayfish, the Marmor crabs,
mm-hmm.
the parthenogenic crayfish.
Interesting.
They'll have a tank raising those, and then they'll feed the Oscars with them.
Wow.
And they will just crunch those things up like anything.
Where are Oscars from, natively?
They're South,
are they South American,
American, I believe. Or is it Central American? I think it's South American. Pretty sure. And they are actually, there's a fairly large population in Florida now.
Oh.
Feral population in Florida.
But not natively,
not native,
like people
no.
released it.
Yeah, people released them. And they're considered a good sport fish there. No. Kind of funny. But, let's see. Yeah, that would be one of my first go-tos, would try Wet Web Media. Monster Fish Keepers might be good, too.
Is that another website?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And I would say an interesting thing that some people have done with fish like that, I think I started to say this but stopped, is that they will put a planted sump attached to that tank. So the plants are getting... are removing nitrates from that tank. So it's like a veggie filter idea,
mm-hmm.
but it's a separate tank that just they share water. The water circulates in and out of that mm-hmm. other tank to keep the nitrates down, because it's hard to do so in a tank that big unless you're doing really big water changes. But a planted tank attached to it can be helpful.
When we went to the aquaponics place,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't Oscars that they had.
Which aquaponics place are you talking about?
With Michelle.
We've been to a couple. Oh, okay. That one, no. They had koi in one tank, and they had trout in the other.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I was trying to remember if they had... Could you do that with Oscars? Aquaponics setups?
I've heard of it being done. Yeah, typically what I have heard about if people are doing Oscars is that they will have tilapia
mm-hmm.
and Oscars.
Together.
In the same tank. And what happens is, like, the tilapia will breed, the Oscars will eat some of the tilapia, keeping them down... keeping the numbers down on
uh-huh.
the tilapia. But then the Oscars will also, they'll eat them. I remember reading a book on it. It was quite a few years ago when aquaponics was in its infancy. And they said that they had put tilapia together with Oscars, and they said that the Oscars tasted better than the tilapia.
Interesting.
Yeah. It was an interesting idea, but it also kept the tilapia from overbreeding. Because if you keep tilapia together in a breeding situation, what happens is you'll end up with thousands of small ones.
Teeny tilapia.
Because they'll be breeding a lot, and they'll be diverting
mm-hmm.
a lot of energy towards breeding and not as much towards growth. They're very prolific, but
mm-hmm.
none of those fish gets as much food as it needs. Or very few of them get as much food as it needs for maximum growth. And so by putting the Oscars in, they reduce the numbers, allowing the tilapia that did live to grow bigger.
But then they found that the Oscars actually taste better.
Yeah.
That's amusing.
Interesting. Yeah, but unfortunately, tilapia are pretty much illegal here in our state.
Why is that? Some people don't release
sure.
them?
There's all kinds of things like that I don't understand, because there are very few places in Utah that they could thrive. In the winter. A few hot springs, probably.
That's
would be
it,
about it. But there are hot springs that have cichlids in them already.
Hmm.
So, I don't know. Anyway. Hopefully that helps a bit. Both for Joe and for Jeremiah.
Yeah. Okay, we have one more. Matt in Perth, Western Australia. Says, hello, Russ and Kelly. Champagne problems are luxury problems.
They're first world problems.
Yes.
That Weird Al song.
That's a great Weird Al song. If you guys haven't heard that, go look that up.
Yeah, I actually thought he was referring to purling in his tank.
Oh.
Because, you know, that makes
sense. Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
I thought that it was bubbling because of the tank was purling because the lights, you know... Because
it was
producing enough photosynthesis that it looked like bubbly champagne.
No, he's just...
But he wasn't.
...drawing an analogy.
Yep.
For example, if you want a brand new car, but it used a little more fuel than the old car. Yes, that is annoying and will cost a little more, but it really is a luxury problem and you should just be grateful at having the new vehicle. Hence, having to trim the valise as it grows vigorously is a champagne problem, as the aquarium clearly is thriving. Sadly, the fish are not drunk or in a bubbly paradise.
I was just thinking about the purling plants, but I was wrong.
Well, you know, context.
Yeah.
Yeah. He says, I will at some point learn how to breed mandarin fish food. I agree with Kelly that mandarin fish are one of the most beautiful fish out there, but providing them with food, as I have discovered, is not easy. What do they eat?
Pods.
Like isopods?
Little tiny copepods and isopods and amphipods and that kind of stuff. And other crustaceans too, but you
know. That's me doing a random, not even a real quote. I'm like referencing a quote. Tom might know what it is. I knew
what you were talking about.
But if I said to Tom, lobster basque, you can tell me if you know what that is. If you don't know what it is, go look it up on YouTube. Okay, sorry.
No, it's okay. They're micro predators, so they eat little crustaceans, mostly, and you know anything else that's small enough. But little live food, so people will make pod piles for their mandarin fish.
Pod piles?
Yeah, they'll get a bunch of live rock.
Mm-hmm.
And stack it up in a way so that the fish can't really get to the inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
But pods, amphipods, isopods, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing, copepods can breed inside there, and then they'll go out and populate the tank, and then the mandarin fish will eat them out of the sand, you know, picking like them off the sand and out of the water column.
It's like a self-replenishing puzzle feeder.
Yeah, kind of like that. And
that's cool.
You can make it so you can drop food down there, and they all the pods can get to it, but none of the fish can get in there.
Cool.
And if you have a huge, big reef tank with just a few fish in it, and you have a mandarin fish, a lot of times it's possible that it can get a lot of its food from just
the critters that
are there. But you can't support, you know, a mandarin fish in a fairly small tank without adding food to it because it'll
deplete them. So you have to, breed your own pods.
Yeah, if you have a refugium, that can help too, because the pods will breed in the refugium, and then... You know, that'll get back into the tank, but nothing can eat them while they're in the refugium, so.
Okay. Well, Matt says, they're also timid fish. My spotted mandarin is a lot braver than Wally, my old mandarin fish. Perhaps I need a bigger aquarium for them, too. Right now, though, they violate my easy-to-maintain rules, so they're on the shelf for the moment. I discovered while researching discus that discus under the size of 100 millimeters, or 4 inches, need daily 50% water changes to grow any bigger.
Wow.
All of the discus that have died are smaller than 100 millimeters. Daily 50% water changes in a functioning display aquatic forest aquarium is not realistic. The plants could not take the strain. Perhaps if the discus were in an empty glass tank with no substrate and only PVC pipes for hiding places, it would be feasible. But the environmentalist in me does not like the idea of pouring hundreds of liters of water down the drain each week.
Right. Plus, yeah, it's not as attractive in a tank like that either.
No, it's not as fun. My friend Christy has changed her mind and now wants a cuttlefish. Oh, just like Xander.
Mm-hmm.
Our second son totally wants cuttlefish. I'm not sure that you can even keep cuttlefish. She originally was into seahorses, too. I reckon a species tank of seahorses wouldn't be too difficult. Lighting does not matter, nor does current. Low current is much better for the seahorses. Probably just need frequent water changes. What did you guys find out about dwarf seahorses that made them high maintenance?
Okay. First of all, a quick thing on the cuttlefish. I looked that up because, as I said...
We have a son who, he wants to be a marine biologist when he grows up.
And he's very much into
cephalopods.
Especially cephalopods and all other abyssal and deep sea creatures. But
he thinks they're super cool.
So he's been interested in them for many years. So cuttlefish.
If he could buy a Luminous, he would probably think that was the awesomest thing ever.
Oh, yeah. So I looked that up and to see how feasible it would be, just, you know. And it's... unfortunately, not very easy to get a cuttlefish. Depending on where you live, and you can do it, but apparently there are only a few species that are commonly, or that are ever available. Of the ones that are available, a lot of them aren't really very easy to keep in aquaria. There are one or two that aren't that difficult to keep in aquaria, but they don't ship very well, and when they do, they're very expensive.
What is it, like $150 a piece?
Yeah, when each? You can get them, something like that. But their eggs apparently ship much more easily.
And are much more...
Much more likely to...
Cost-effective.
Yeah, they're cheaper. But also, you have to raise them on either live mysid shrimp and things like that, or entice them to eat things by... Like, our aquarium, our local aquarium, keeps cuttlefish, and apparently multi-generationally. What they do, they have this special feeder that is in the wake of a power head, and it's got, like, what do you call them, fishing line with little balls of clay and then plastic fork tines shoved into the balls of clay, and then they impale little shrimp on the ends of those, and so they wiggle
They're
around
kind of
in the water
moving in the current,
so that the cuttlefish are enticed to go after them. Anyway, we've gone there and seen adult cuttlefish and baby cuttlefish at various times, so we're assuming...
The last couple times they keep hiding. Like, we can't find them. They're behind all the rocks.
Yeah. But the time before that, or the time before that, we saw lots of little babies, and then we've seen adults in there, and so I think that's what they're doing, is breeding them. But anyway, not terribly easy, but they seem to be one of the easier of all cephalopods to keep, because they are less likely to escape than an octopus. A lot more comfortable in captivity than a squid. So they seem to be...
You can't keep squid in captivity.
You can't really
keep
very many species of squid at all. They just don't do well. But apparently the cuttlefish can do fairly well. And you can keep some of the smaller species in like a 20-gallon tank, which is, you know, fairly feasible. Mm-hmm. So, interesting stuff. But, we don't have any direct experience with it. I've only read about it. But there used to be a site that advertised, you know, the availability of cuttlefish, and sadly, though the site still exists, they don't provide cuttlefish anymore. They were doing some captive breeding, and I guess that didn't pan out or something.
That's too bad.
Yeah. So, seahorses. Okay. Well, let's talk about the seahorses. And the dwarf seahorses that made them high maintenance. Dwarf seahorses are actually really easy to keep in some ways. They don't need a large tank, and as you mentioned, they don't need a lot of current, and they don't need a special lighting. So in all of those ways, they're fairly simple to do. And if you've got a small tank, water changes aren't that big of a deal. And actually, dwarf seahorses, the current knowledge is, from the last time I did research, that keeping them in a much smaller tank makes it more manageable, because maintaining food density in, say, a 2-gallon tank or a 2.5-gallon tank or whatever is much easier than trying to do it in a larger tank. So they say don't keep them in anything bigger than 5 gallons.
Because they can't find their food.
Unless you've got a lot of them. And there are a lot of things that are going for them that make them pretty easy. The main difficulty is that they require live food, unlike a lot of seahorses, which can be enticed to accept enriched, you know, thawed shrimp, like mysid shrimp. You can enrich them with certain... supplements, and then that can be a healthy staple diet for them. Doesn't work for dwarf seahorses. They need live food, and you need to get them like fresh baby brine shrimp that have very recently hatched, so that they still have most of the nutrition that they originally hatched with. If you wait 6, 8, 12 hours, then they lose a lot of that and they don't thrive on that. So basically you need to hatch brine shrimp a couple of times a day. And if you're prepared to do that...
How often do you need to feed them?
A couple of times a day, approximately.
Wow.
So, if you want to hatch baby brine shrimp... Now, when we were raising baby bettas, we hatched baby brine shrimp once or twice a day, depending. And that, you know, it's not super complicated, but if you want to go out of town or something, then you have a problem, because you have to train somebody how to do it.
If you have difficult hours at work.
Right. Like, when we did it, it only took... I would decapsulate them and so on, and it didn't take all that long, but it was something I had to do every day. That's, I guess, the main thing. So if you're prepared to hatch baby brine shrimp, then you're good. There are also a couple of other things you can do to help with their diet. If you... They like to eat copepods, too. So some people will introduce copepods into their tank and get kind of a population going there, but they will eat a lot of them. Another thing, if I believe it was Mike Wickham who suggested this? I'm not sure. I'll have to go back and look. But he keeps olive nerites with his. And the olive neurites lay eggs, and the eggs hatch into the villagers, and they eat the villagers.
Oh.
So that helps, too. You can't maintain them solely on a diet of villagers. I mean, but it's just a supplement. So there's always something going around in the tank. Some people even keep opaula with them.
They eat the opaula?
And they will eat the zoea, the baby opaula, when they newly hatch. And those are apparently quite nutritious. So if you keep them with the... You keep them with a group of adults. They can't eat the adults because they're too small to eat the adults. But they'll eat those newly hatched babies. And all those things can help. So, yeah, that's the only thing was the feeding. Everything else seems fairly easy and straightforward.
Okay. You'll have to let us know if she decides to do one of those.
Yeah.
Oh, do we have one from Mick, too?
We do.
Oh, he wasn't on my list.
He wasn't?
No, you didn't put him on the list. But we will happily do Mick. Okay. Says, hi, guys. Just thought I would send you a note while taking refuge in the shop. We are stranded in Kendall as we had a huge storm on Saturday, which cut the town off with the river bursting and all roads in and out of the town closed off. Oh, goodness. We've also found out now that although the electricity in the shop around Kendall is okay, the power around the Carnforth area is shut off, possibly until Tuesday. So all the heaters and filters on stuff at home are off. Oh, no.
So fingers crossed for all your critters in Carnforth.
Mm-hmm. We've booked into a town center hotel here for a couple of nights and are going to try to get home tomorrow to get some heat going around from the living room gas fire and get some hot water bottles filled from the gas stove, even if we have to do it by candlelight. I've attached a few pictures of the floods taken yesterday. Best wishes, Mick. And he says he signs it Mick, not in the one and only Carnforth yet.
Yeah. So fingers crossed for Mick.
Oh, wow. I hope everything goes okay.
Yeah. And he's got several pictures showing how flooded it is. Look at that.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I hope everything is okay.
Yeah, they're swimming in Kendall there.
Wow.
It's... You half expect a hippo to be walking by or something. It's crazy.
Holy cow. Well, good luck, Mick. I hope you guys stay safe and all of your critters are okay and you don't lose anything.
Yeah, especially... It's got to be quite cold this time of year.
Yeah. Yes, it's not warm tropical flooding. It's cold.
The last time we had flooding anything like that was back
in Hawaii.
In Hawaii when
we were kayaking in the field.
Yeah, and then the university shut down and everything.
Yeah, that was exciting.
Well,
wow.
Yeah, let's hope it all is all doing that everything is okay. Let us know. We'll be hoping to hear good news.
Yeah. I think that's everybody, though.
I think it is. So,
in the meantime,
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.